Bow hunters are some of the hardest working hunters there are. Most of us work hard all year long just to get a couple weekends or burn our vacation time to sit in a tree. And just like the American blue collar worker, we're trying to balance work, family, faith, and a little time for ourselves in the great outdoors. Now let me introduce you to Trollco Clothing, a brand built by blue collar workers for blue collar workers. Workwear, comfortable tees, hoodies and hats for both men and women, Trollco represents the hardworking American. So whether you're operating heavy equipment, wrenching on engines, or in a factory living that shift life, Trollco has your back, literally. Head to trollco.com/hunting. That's trollco.com/hunting and enter the discount code Empire25 for 25% off of your first order. Trollco, for the hardworking American.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
Hey guys, before we start, a quick shout out to Alpha Dog Nutrition for sponsoring this podcast. Alpha Dog products are now available at dusupply.com, and you can use code ALPHADOG15 at checkout for 15% off and a credit for free shipping to try it yourself. Now let's get you to your podcast.
Where's Fielder?
He's gone to the dogs.
Welcome, friends. Steve Fielder here with you one more time on the Gone to the Dogs podcast. This recording is being made on the day after Christmas 2024. We had a quiet little Christmas here on the west coast of Florida, my wife and I. And we had her daughter, Jackie, and her two children, Caitlin and Tyler, with us on Christmas Day. We had a lovely time, family time, slow and easy. Oh, I forgot to mention the boys that are always here, Louie the Dachshund and Boo the Plot Hound. So we had a great time. There were gifts. There were some terrific food, courtesy of my lovely wife. We had a non-traditional Christmas meal this year. We were all, I think, tired of turkey and stuffing and all of that. And you cook it, and it takes all day, and you eat it a time or two or three or four, and you're sick of it. So I think turkeys are going to be safe from the Fielder domicile going forward. But anyway, we had a great time, and I hope you did too. This is the time of year for family. This is a time to spend with your kids and your grandkids and your in-laws and your outlaws. It's something we look forward to all year long, and we plan for it, and some of us really stress too much over it. We often forget that it is in remembrance of Christ our Savior, who was born somewhere around this date. Those many years ago, and the reason that he came was to give us everlasting life, and we are so very thankful for that. I was just thinking here, this episode will drop on December 30th, which that will be Christmas Eve, and the weekend following New Year's, I said Christmas Eve. I mean New Year's Eve. Oh, man, this going old is not for sissies, I tell you, friends. It's a challenge. But at any rate, coon hunters, especially along the eastern seaboard, know that the weekend following New Year's, the first full weekend following, is always the dates for the Grand American Coon Hunt in Orangeburg, South Carolina. For many, many years, I have been going to Orangeburg, managed to go even though the registry that was licensing the event may not have been the one I was working for at the time, but I had a great relationship with the folks at the Grand American over the years and always felt welcome there, and they always made space available for me, regardless of which magazine I was with or which registry I happened to be representing. So we'll be in Orangeburg, be kind of palling around with Jason Duby. Of course, Jason and Danny Duby are publishers of Full Crime Magazine. And for many years, I was in the booth there in the vendor barn with Terry Walker with CNH Publishing, publishers of American Cooner, Full Cry, Rabbit Hunter, and The Hunter's Horn. As you know, the American Cooner has gone the way of so many things in our sport, the carbide light, the kerosene lantern, and unfortunately, the American Cooner magazine has been added to that list. But nevertheless, Jason and Danny have contracted for that booth space there in the white vendor barn as you walk over from the headquarters building over toward the big white barn. Be the first entrance you come to there on the broad side of the building. The ladies' restroom is just to the left as you walk in that entranceway, and we'll be the first booth on the right. So if you are at the Grand American this year, please come by and say hello. We enjoy meeting and talking to so many friends. And the only time we get to see a lot of you is on Grand American weekend. It's just a great time, you know. It's laid back, it's low key, it's a night hunt for sure. They have two nights of hunting, a couple days of bench shows, and crowds like you wouldn't believe, and every vendor of coon hunting paraphernalia, supplies, apparel, you name it. A lot of organizations bring out their new products at the Grand American. So anyway, those dates will be January 3rd and 4th. So that'll be coming up the weekend following the dropping of this podcast. So if you're listening to this on Monday, December 30th, Grand American will crank up with the vendor activities on Thursday evening. Usually the vendors set up on Thursday. That's when I drive up from Florida and usually arrive there before they close the vendor barns for the evening. Those barns are locked, closed and locked, so the vendors don't have to tear down their displays and so forth. So that's all taken care of. And then there's usually a dinner hosted by the Chamber of Commerce. And I've been fortunate enough to attend those meetings. And here I am getting some kind of a sales call on my phone. I did not put my phone on Do Not Disturb, so there you have it. Anyway, so Grand American coming up, man, good times. Don't know what the weather's going to be this year. I haven't checked the forecast. It's a few days out, but usually you can just about prepare for anything. Sometimes we've had snow over the years, and other times it's been windy and cold, and other years it's been warm and sunny, so just watch the forecast and dress accordingly. If you get rain, you want to get make sure you've got some dry footwear, some boots. I'm sure the vendors will be happy to sell you a pair, but I haven't seen water so high that you needed your waders. But anyway, Grand American, the grand lady of coon hunting. All coon hunters, especially on the eastern seaboard, start their year off. I wouldn't think of it without going to the Grand American. My buddy Mark Miller will be there. Mark is on a mission. He wants to bring back the stud dog barns. The atmosphere of years gone by where the stud dog owners would come and display their hounds and their banners and all of that. And last year he was there with our Bear Pen Fever, the plot dog. He'll be there again this year in the stud barn. He's informed me that our good friend Bill Scheninger from Ohio, with the Lazarus dog and perhaps others, he'll be there. He and Mark are going to set up adjacent to each other in the stud barn. So go by and see Mark in the stud barn. Come by and see me over in the Full Cry booth. And I'll probably be fluctuating around. I always make a stop over in the headquarters area to visit all my friends with the National Plot Hound Association. I usually see my friends with Purina there. It's just a great time to get around and visit and see people you haven't seen for a whole year. But anyway, Fever will be there, our quadruple grand champion. We're kind of proud of Fever. He is a PKC champion also, has the HTX title. And he had a birthday here back in October. And so Fever is now 3 years old. We were real proud of him. His first year, he won high scoring plot there at the Grand American. But some things are just not meant to be. This year, Mark is suffering from a severe back issue, bulging disc. He's been very limited in his ability to hunt this fall and winter. But thanks to his friends down there have been going with him and going in and handling the dog and all. We really appreciate those guys that go, you know, the extra mile to help out. We sure do. But anyway, so old Fever will be at the Grand American. I want to, at this point, each time you listen to this podcast, if you listen to the introduction, you'll hear the voice of two guys. You'll hear the pickup truck rolling down the gravel road, coming to a stop, the door opening, a voice saying, "Where's Fielder?" And another voice will answer, "He's gone to the dogs." And you'll hear a big mouth walker dog treeing in the distance. Those voices are supplied by Rob Giddings and his dad, Frank Giddings, for Rock River Kennels up in Michigan. Everybody in the walker breed and perhaps in sport of coon hunting knows the legend that is Frank Giddings and his son Rob. Rob runs a light business and is very active in the sport. So I want to just give a shout out to Frank and Rob. I didn't get up to go hunting with them this fall in Michigan. I wish that I could have done that. I kind of thought about it all year, and things just seemed to creep up on me. But with this new prospect that I have now, I think a trip to Michigan in this fall of 2025 will be right down his alley. And I saw a post by our good friend Alan Snedeker on Facebook just today, I think, and talking about that he needed to get together with somebody, maybe our friend Charlie Bodkins there from Michigan. Reminded me of Alan and Beth, and they've been great friends over the years. They led the Walker Association through some of its very best years. And I remember those Lee Crawford Memorial banquets that were held on Thursday night at Walker Days, and Alan's remembrance. Of course, he's married to Beth Snedeker, who Beth is the daughter of Lester Nance. We call him the father of the Tring Walker breed. These are great, great folks that I look forward to seeing whenever possible. And usually when I go up to Michigan, I get to hunt with Rob and with Frank and the Kiefer boys there that are friends of Alan's close by. We just have a great time up there. So give a shout out to all my Michigan friends. Had many great years in Michigan. Enjoyed the hunting. It's just phenomenal. And the people were even better. So I mentioned just real briefly this prospect that I have here. I call him Bear Pen Fever's ghost. Years ago, I had a light brindle colored plot dog that I called Ghost, and he was sired by probably my all-time favorite plot hound, a dog called Bear Pen Bronco. Bronco was bred to a female in Missouri owned by Robert Hatton from around Hannibal, Missouri way, and was bred twice, and that cross produced some really good plots. Sadie, Robert's female, was a Brandenburger bred. She was bred down out of Slim, and can't remember exactly her sire right now. But anyway, it was a good cross, and I kept a young male named Ghost. Liked him a lot, and the Fever dog reminds me a lot of Ghost. Both of them were a little bit stingy with their mouth, used it just in the right amounts when they needed to. Were definitely not what you'd call babblers, and were tree dogs and accurate tree dogs, and that's what I like the best. But at any rate, Ghost was killed by a landowner on Valentine's night in a senseless act that still makes my blood boil when I think about it. But when John Sapier of Spartanburg, South Carolina, bred his Xena female to Fever, the cross produced a light brindle male that really caught my eye. I saw his picture on Facebook, and you know the story. I've talked about it here before. Ella and I discussed it. She said, well, raising the dog down here in Florida is not easy, but if you'll let me bring him in the house, I'll be all for you getting this puppy because I know you want him. You keep talking about how good he looks. So anyway, we did the deal with John to get a puppy out of his Xena Warrior Princess female and Bear Pen Fever and brought him back to Florida. And that's a whole discussion right there in itself on the pros and cons of raising a coonhound puppy in the house. And that was part of our deal. Ella wanted him to bring him right in the house, like our dachshund, and let him be part of the family. And I said, well, that's fine. I know it's going to be a challenge, especially with these dogs that are bred for performance. They're not lap dogs usually. They're not docile. They have lots of energy, so you have to be able to challenge that energy. But we've got along pretty well with Ghost. We call him Boo for short. He's a beautiful light brindle color. Has a head of a plot that I really like, with the ears attached high to the skull, and nice blocky muzzle, dark eyes. just the kind of dog I like. You know, if you like the looks of a dog, I believe you'll put more time into it. I've noticed that myself with my personal dogs over the years. We jokingly say, you know, you don't want to have to back up to the dog with the feed pan when it's time to feed them. And this guy certainly is a looker now. He's got personality plus. But he knows how to switch it off in the house. And that's been, you know, what I wondered about when we brought him along. But it's been fun. Now, here's a couple of tips I have for you if you plan to raise a coonhound puppy inside, especially if that dog is a performance bred dog. These plot hounds have lots of energy. I've noticed especially these Lazarus bred plots who Fever is out of Saddle Up Lazarus, Bill Scheninger's stud dog. They have a lot of drive. They have a lot of energy. And you have to challenge that energy. But they also are very people-oriented. They love people. In fact, it's a bit of a challenge, probably the biggest challenge we have with Ghost. And we had the same problem with the dachshund. They get along fine when it's just Ella and me, but when somebody comes to the house, they want to show their affection. They are so happy to see anybody that comes along. And so that creates the desire to jump and that's not good in some cases. So we have to kind of watch that. And I have found that the use of my Garmin 200 with my TT25 collar work very well for disciplinary training in the house. And if you listen to my friend Heath Hyatt in his dog training podcast, you'll see that this stimulation, or STEM as he commonly calls it, administered in very small doses can work wonders with these dogs. A lot of times people totally misuse an e-collar, choosing just because there's 18 positions, 18 numbers on that collar, doesn't mean you have to crank it up. You know, use the very minimal amount that you can actively get the dog's attention. That's what I strive to do. And it's very good for tone training. Later on, you'll want to use the tone maybe as a recall assistant. But anyway, we have Ghost here in the house with us. He lives with us. He doesn't sleep with us. He has a crate that he goes to at night. And he has certain areas in the house that he can roam. Many homes here in Florida have tile floors, and part of our home is that way. So we put baby gates to restrict his activity when he's inside, unless we happen to be in the room. And he's a couch potato. He'll settle right down and lay on the couch. Of course, he and the dachshund like to play. And when that gets a little too rough, maybe that tone button comes into play. And if that doesn't do the trick, a little bit of stamp, and things settle right down. But anyway, that's one of the things that you need to be concerned about with keeping a dog inside. The other thing is housebreaking. Of course, nobody wants their dogs to use the home for the bathroom. So we found that if you take a puppy out often, every time you think about it, really, probably more than you should, but let them out or take them outside, and they'll catch on real quick. And Boo certainly has done that. Now, he's had a couple of accidents, but it's been usually when I just didn't really react to his signals quickly enough. So anyway, coonhounds in the house, definitely doable. They're very loving. When you're watching TV, they like to lay beside you there on the sofa and put their head on your knee and have their ear scratched. And if you're a dog lover, you're a dog person, it doesn't get much better than that. And that's the part that I love about having the dog in the house. Now, some of you hardcore guys say, no way I'm having a stinking hound in my house. And well, true. You know, you don't want the dog to be out there rolling in the mud and then the next minute be rolling on your furniture. So there are, you know, sometimes you have to bathe the dog. I think that the more you expose these dogs, especially the younger ones, to at a young age, the better, you know, rounded dog they're going to be. And they're going to be a joy to be with, regardless of the situation. Now, when I went to White River, I let Boo ride in the front seat of the truck. I drove up to Nubbins, and in fact, I even let him sleep in the truck overnight, and we had prepared the dog box to take to White River, so I didn't have straw and so forth in the dog box, so I just let him sleep in the truck. Well, Nubbin asked me, well, aren't you afraid he's going to chew the thing up? I said, no, he doesn't chew the furniture at home. He's not going to chew this, and sure enough, he didn't. And so then I did put him in the dog box on the ride on out to White River. When we got to White River, we used a breakdown dog box. Nubbin had a couple of them, and we staked him out to a dog box, and he lived like a hound for the whole 6 or 7 days that we were there. Adjusted to it very well. The first day, he kind of wanted to try my patience a little bit because he was excited about all the other dogs and all the activity in the camp. So we put a Garmin bark collar on him, put it on a low setting. The first time it caught him barking, he shut right down. Then he decided he'd try it again. And in that situation, he barked and he got stemmed and he barked because he got stemmed. And then, when it stemmed him, he barked again. And so we had a little bit of rebound activity going on there. But I found that is a good introduction to the e-collar for dogs. For later on, perhaps when you need to use it on the recall or you need to use it for off game, when they hear that tone, they remember that experience with that bark collar. And it kind of reinforces that without having to use the shock feature on the e-collar. So maybe you haven't thought about that, but for me, that works real well. One thing I've never been able to tolerate is a dog just standing around barking for no reason. And that's one thing about in our camp, the dogs quieten down at night. If a dog's barking, we know that there's something around out there. So Ghost, or Boo as I call him, will start hunting down here now. This is the time of year in Florida that we typically enjoy coon hunting the most. The weather cools down, the humidity's gone, the snakes are in, the gators are in. We've had several cool evenings here lately. And so my friend Gordy Schrader has already told me that when things settle down, he'll be at the Grand American as well. And after that, we plan to do some hunting. So I'm looking forward to taking Boo. He's now 5 months old. He's starting to grow finally. He was the runt of the litter and was a smaller dog, but he's coming on. He really is. So I'm really looking forward to that. And I'll try to give you a progress report on him. One thing I found about this line of dogs, they're very prey-minded. They're very gamey. They don't miss anything. Boo here. We've got every variety of bird you can imagine, you know, herons and egrets and cranes and everything you can imagine. And he never misses a trick. When they fly over, he's watching them. He's already, you know, learned about the squirrels around here. So at first I let him bark a little bit on the squirrels, but I've kind of restricted that. I'm not really planning to train him to be a squirrel dog. And he showed me at the White River that he is a natural tree dog on raccoon. And so that's what I'm going to concentrate on going forward. Anyway, that's enough. It's not intended to be a brag. Who knows what he'll ultimately turn out to be. But from the reports we're getting on these fever pups, we just couldn't be happier. They seem like they really want to get after the game at an early age, and that's always a good thing. Okay, I just did an article for Bear Hunting Magazine. Colby Moorhead, who is the publisher of Bear Hunting, asks me on a regular basis to write columns for their Legendary Bear Hound series. And I just did a story about a dog in North Carolina owned by Gary Martin. And I want to share just the opening paragraph of this. Now, Bear Hunting Magazine is a bi-monthly, just like Full Cry, and it's published here in Bentonville, Arkansas, by, as I said, Colby Moorhead. Colby bought the magazine from Clay Newcomb, and Colby is a great guy to work with. In fact, he does the production work on this podcast for W Hunting Supply. So we appreciate Colby a lot. But the dog that I wrote about was a plot dog, 5 years old, that was ultimately killed by a bear. Now, the criteria for these legendary bear dog articles is that the dog must be deceased. Well, actually, this dog was killed by a bear just this season. That is still ongoing. But here's what I wrote. Just one paragraph I'm going to share with you. Maybe whet your appetite a little bit. Gary Martin is a man on a mission. The mission is twofold: to produce elite bear hounds and to use them to find the mammoth black bears of the Eastern Carolina and Virginia coast, many weighing more than 600 pounds. The hounds must be adept at trailing in some of the thickest terrain on the planet and at bringing the Bruins to justice, legendary bear hound style. Lately, the bears have been settling the score, as evidenced by the number of top hounds that have met their Waterloo when the big bears fight back. One such hound was the legendary Adolph, about whom the following story is told. Adolph, Panther Swamp Adolph. It was a great story. And the thing that I enjoy so much about writing these legendary bear hound stories is that I get to hear the stories, and I get to hear them firsthand from the owners of these dogs. I get all the emotion, you know. We really invest ourselves in these dogs. And when we lose a good one, it hurts down deep. And so in that regard, you know, I have to kind of share that grief with the owner of the dog. But at the same time, I get to share the pride that owner has in having a great dog. And so I enjoy writing these articles. Sometimes I grumble about it, and my wife would tell you this. It's difficult to find the subject matter. And then once you do find it, find a dog that you want to write about, there's the matter of having good photo support for the dog. And some hunters do a great job, as did Gary Martin, of providing really good photography for his story. But others don't do so well. So, you know, it's kind of tough to put a story in a nice, slick magazine like Bear Hunter, or Bear Hunting magazine, and not have good photo support for it. So if you're out there and you've got a dog that meets the criteria, in your, at least in your mind, of legendary, and you have good photos of that dog, and perhaps photos of the dog with some of the bears that were caught, and maybe the dog treeing, or dogs with, or pictures with your hunting party, and those kind of things, I'm interested in talking to you. You can reach me on social media in just about any way at Stephen, S-T-E-P-H-E-N, dot F, dot Fielder, F-I-E-L-D-E-R. So if you have not subscribed to Bear Hunting Magazine and you like good hound information, and it's not an entirely hound hunting magazine. It's also for the still hunter, the bait hunter, and so forth. But there's a lot of good hound hunting content in that. Now, speaking of hound hunting, I earlier mentioned the fact that Jason and Danny Duby are now publishing Full Cry magazine. Full Cry has been a tradition in my family ever since I was very young. And I've told the story many times of us, you know, the magazine coming to the mailbox and me picking it up, and it came rolled tightly in brown paper. And that brown paper was woven into the pages. So you had to be very careful to cut that brown paper so you could get the cover off. And, man, I wouldn't have done for me to have cut my dad's magazine up. But I couldn't wait until he came home to read it. I wanted to get the first shot at it if I could. And I read all those stories by O.L. Beckham and by Obe Corey and by O.O. Grant and just all the columns in there from all those great people. I read all the field trial news and all the water race news. And you know, as the years went by, the evolution of the magazine had kind of turned toward the squirrel hunter or the cur dog. At one time, you know, it always had a lot of big game stuff in there. It started out primarily as a coon hunting magazine, and that's what piqued my interest the most. And, of course, I enjoyed bear hunting, too, due to the fact that my dad was a lifelong bear hunter. But, you know, it kind of become a squirrel dog magazine. A lot of people kind of drifted away that were, you know, coonhound purists and so forth. But when the Doobies decided to resurrect Full Cry, they made a commitment to cover all the genres, all the different aspects of the treehound sport, and put it into a slick publication and get good writers to do the articles and good photography and all that, and it's all there. And it's a bi-monthly. Again, you get 6 issues a year. And it's time for you to renew your Full Cry subscription, I'm sure, because the Doobies brought it out, you know, early or maybe late in the fall a year or more ago. So don't drag your feet, guys. Get that subscription in. And the reason I ask you to do that, not only will you enjoy the magazine, as I do, and as all the folks that have remained with Full Cry, or the new subscribers that have come along, but also you are protecting the tradition of coon hunting. Full Cry Magazine's editorial was very supportive of the recent fight in Colorado to save mountain lion hunting. They're going to be proactive on the legislative issues for sure. They're hound people. Jason, of course, works his day job is with W Hunting Supply, and he's the guy you most likely will talk to on the phone with your technical problems and issues with your Garmin and Dogtrend, different types of equipment. But they're just great folks, and they're doing a great job with the magazine. And we need to support them. You know, without those subscribers and the advertisers, you know, Full Cry will go away. There's no question about that. But it's been doing really good, and subscriptions have increased and all, but now at the first of the year when people are a little bit stressed, their budget's a little stressed. But don't forget Full Cry. You know, put a few bucks aside and get that subscription in and enjoy Full Cry every other month in your mailbox. You'll be happy that you did that for sure. All right. Well, you know, this time of year, for me, traditionally, down through the years, living in West Virginia, being the son of a bear hunter, being, you know, when the wintertime set in and coon hunting virtually came to a close, the dog hunting didn't stop for us. Now, up north, typically, the bear seasons are in September, October maybe, and then the bear hunters, a lot of them, coyote hunt with their hounds. Well, the bear seasons in West Virginia, the taking seasons, are typically in the month of December. And in the mountains, the Appalachian Mountains, the Alleghenies, you know, it's a lot of times there's snow on the ground. And but anyway, going to bear camp and bear hunting in the snow, not always in the snow, but many times, was something that I looked forward to. You know, as a kid, when I would be in school, you know, I would ask my dad, you know, at the end of the day, if he could. Sometimes he'd have to go to a payphone. Some of you young bucks don't even know what that is. But I'd ask him to call and tell me about his hunt and about how the dogs did and did they get a bear that day and so forth. But so it was very much a part of my wintertime activity as a kid, and I thought it'd be fun here to kind of go back and look at some of the stories that my dad told me. And I had recorded these stories at Thanksgiving in 2005. That was 3 years before my dad died. I'd gone down to spend the Thanksgiving holiday with my folks in West Virginia. And, you know, Mom and Dad were still living in the home where my brother Randy and I were raised. And one evening, Dad and I were talking dogs, and I decided to take out the laptop and record a few of the stories for a website that I had at the time called plotdogs.com. So here are a few of those short stories from the amazing memory of my dad, Holman Fielder. He was a lifetime member of the National Plothound Association. He's in the Hall of Fame, and he's in the West Virginia Bear Hunters Hall of Fame. And he bred plot dogs for more than 50 years. He was 85 years old at the time that I recorded these stories. Here's a little short one called Wading the Cheat River. Now, I was up at fly fished a little bit on the Cheat River this spring when I went up to West Virginia in last spring, I should say, in April to attend the West Virginia Plot Sectional in honor of my good friend John Sturgill. And it was just a great time. And anyway, this is what my dad said. We went on a hunt before the regular season here in West Virginia was open, and Keith Cooper only had one dog at the time, old Molly. We were hunting on Cheat Mountain. There was snow on the ground, and we found a track. We couldn't tell if it was made the day before or the night before. John Harris had four dogs, and Keith had one. These were all plot dogs. The dogs struck off the road and opened good and moved on to the top of the mountain. They made a circle down under us and got the bear jumped. I wasn't familiar with the country, but those two guys knew it like the back of their hands. I didn't time the race, but they ran for a long time. They made a loop down along the Cheat River. Molly was old and couldn't keep up. She had been a real good hound. With her being behind the four younger and faster dogs, Keith decided to catch her. She was on the other side of the Cheat River. Keith had to wade the river to get to her. There was snow on the ground and it was cold. He waded the icy river with the water above the knees. He tried to catch her but missed her. A couple of hours later, they came back into that country, the dogs, that be. Keith waded across again, and this time he was able to catch his dog. John's four dogs stayed with the bear and treated it. When he would get to the tree, the bear would come down, and the race was on again. Finally, he caught them all but one, and Keith had ended up wading the Cheat River four times in that icy water. Keith and John always put forth every effort to catch their dogs. There's nothing I could add to that except that it just shows the tenacity and the determination and the toughness of the mountain bear hunter. And I know that the hunters across the upper Midwest and Maine, and my friend Mark Dufresne comes to mind, and my friend Joe Hudson up in Michigan, I know those guys are tough hunters. And I know Roy Clark in Tennessee and Ira Jones and all those fellows are tough, tough hunters. Bear hunters are a different breed. They really are. And there's a creed within them that, you know, you don't leave your dog behind. And if you have any idea what the Cheat River is like, it's probably 100 yards across in some places, 50 easily in most. Swift, pocket water, wading that swift river four times in ice water would not be a pleasant activity. So, okay, let's see here. There's another story here that my dad shared with me. This one's called Julie Along the Interstate. And this story is about National Plot Hound Association Hall of Fame member, champion Broncos Fancy Julie. Okay, let's see if we can share this one with you. Here's my dad speaking. I don't remember the year, but it was in season here in West Virginia. We checked for tracks behind the rest area on Interstate 64 across Paint Creek. We found a track opposite the rest area going north. I turned Julie loose and she went out like it was a hot track. Ron West was up from Tennessee hunting with us. He turned a couple of young dogs loose and John Harris also turned two young dogs loose. They had gone on a coon or something, and they had to catch them off. I went back up Paint Creek on the left-hand side and turned up a hollow and drove up a ways, and old Julie was barking treed on the left side of the hollow. I tried to reach the boys on the radio and couldn't get through to them. They still hadn't caught their dogs. As soon as they caught their dogs, they came on up, and there was a high wall around there, and Julie was treed or baying up over the high wall. Now, high walls are where they strip mine coal and left a virtual cliff around the side of the mountain. They turned their dogs loose, and when we got to the high wall, they went the wrong way. Okay. When Ron got there, we walked up the hollow, and he got his dogs on the track. Ron's dogs weren't used to hunting around these strip jobs, and they hung up on a high wall, and he got them off, and then they went on and ended up getting hung up again. While they were trying to get their dogs in, Julie pulled out of there and went on. We drove the old Paint Creek Road paralleling the interstate for 7 miles, and we got a copy hunter with the tracker on the left, hung up on a high wall. I told John, "I've got to go get my dog." He said, "No, any dog that will put forth that much effort, I'm going to go get it." He went in there and found her lying at the base of the high wall. That was an all-day hunt, hunting with John Harris and Ron West. You know, thinking back, Ron West has passed on. John Harris remains one of the hardest hunters that I've ever seen. And I had copied a statement that my dad made. He said, two of the best bear hunters I ever went in the woods with were John Harris and Keith Cooper, two mountain boys from West Virginia. My dad had a real reverence for those guys, because he'd been on so many hunts with them over the years. And in this next short story, and it'll be the last one, my dad will mention John's great bear dog that virtually every bear hunter in the country knows. He really was a phenomenal dog. This story is called Seven Bears in Two Trees. I'm trying to think what year it was, but it was in September. We went to run the hounds on K Ford Mountain. We had Santana, and in parentheses, I put John Harris's Mountaineer Santana, on the road, and we were driving around an old strip. He struck a bear track, and before we could get any of the other dogs in, he treed. He had a sow and three yearling cubs up a big white oak. The bears were feeding in white oaks. It was warm, and we let the dogs cool off and then put them in the truck. We drove down to the old tunnel along Paint Creek in the Coal River. Now, for any of you folks here, I'll interrupt here, who watched any of the Untamed series on YouTube, those boys hunt a lot on the K Ford Mountain, but they are hunting in the reclaimed K Ford. When my dad and John Harris hunted that mountain, it was virgin. Well, of course, virgin's not the word, because it had been strip mined, but in the old way, where the high walls or cliffs were left around the benches around the sides of the mountains. Later on, they came in and took the whole top off of K Ford Mountain and reclaimed much of it. And much of the video you see of them glassing bears out across a wide expanse of territory is in that reclaimed area. And my dad and John and I on occasion hunted those areas back when it was in its original vertical state. Anyway, back to my dad's story. We crossed from the Paint Creek side to the Coal River side. We went over the tunnel and didn't get a strike and turned and came back. We were back nearly to where the road forked that went from the top to the bottom of K Ford Mountain. We got a strike and we turned loose. I had three dogs, Julie, Rufus, and Abby. And I have a note here. Julie and Abby were sired by champion night champion Bear Pin Plots Bronco. I've talked about Bronco several times before. Bronco was sired by Cascade Big Timber, and his dam was Barry Tarleton's Roberta female. Roberta was sired by White Hollow Jr. and out of a Kermit Allison bred female. Rufus was sired by John Sturgill's Grand Knight Champion Tattoo and was out of our Fancy Two, who was a daughter of Bronco and our champion Hall of Fame member, Bear Pin Fancy. The Abby female was out of Bronco and the dog owned by Robert Hatton, Pioneer Sadie from Missouri. We listened to the dogs over on the Clear Creek side of the mountain, and they were going north. We listened to them until they crossed the ridge. We backed out of there and went back toward the tunnel. They had crossed the ridge and were coming up out of the next hollow and pulling the other ridge. There were seven dogs running like they were looking at the bear. So they pulled out of that hollow and crossed that ridge, and we listened until they went out of hearing. We got around to where we could hear. The dogs were below us all the time, and when we got to hearing, within hearing of them, they were treed. We pulled down the trail as close as we could without disturbing the dogs. It was a real rough, rocky, and snaky place. Lots of rattlesnakes in that country. When we got down to the level of the dogs, we turned and went into the tree. We looked it over, and there was a sow and three cubs. That made seven bears in two trees. So we listened to them tree, and I told John, I'm not going back up the road the way we came in here. We're going to get snake bit. So we went straight up from the tree and turned and went back to the truck. We loaded the dogs up, and John looked around, and we didn't have any truck keys. Here we are, 10 or 12 miles back in the mountains and 30 miles from home, and we're trying to figure out what we're going to do. So I said, I'm not going looking for them the way we went down. It's too snaky. We'll go down to the tree the way we came out. So we went back to the tree, and John was looking around where the dogs had tromped the vegetation down. I went down to the tree, and there laid the keys right at the base of the tree. We decided we better not tell anybody about this. Now, I've shared these stories before on this podcast, and for some of you, you'll remember, but I'm sure you've enjoyed the telling again. The life of my father was an amazing life. He was a family man. He was proud of his profession. He was a journeyman pipe fitter. He was a Christian. And anybody that knew Holman Fielder would know he lived it every single day. I find myself doing some things sometimes that I have to look up and say, Dad, I'm sorry. I know you wouldn't have done it that way. He was a great example for me and my brother, and he taught us this hound sport, you know, and it was quite an honor for me. Here recently, my brother had moved, and he had had the rug of a large sow bear that my dad killed near Moncove Lake in West Virginia, on Back Creek, I believe it was. In fact, I have the West Virginia bear tag right here, the game tag that where my dad checked that bear. It was killed on November 7th of 1970 in Monroe County, and it lists Back Creek as the location. And we wondered what to do with that bear skin, you know, living in a downsized home here in Florida, and already having a bear rug myself, I didn't need to take it or have a place for it. So I posted on Facebook that I had this available, and I got a lot of replies, and all of them were great. And I would have liked to have had a rug for everybody. But my friend Rodney Burris from Tennessee and Mark Dufresne from Maine have been working on a display to teach the history of the plot dog in the form of a trailer that they are going to take around to events and so forth. And so Randy and I donated the bearskin rug from that bear that Dad killed back in 1970 to that exhibit. And I hope when people see it, they will somehow, if they knew my dad, they'll remember. And for the young hunters, hopefully it'll pique their interest in a great sport that served him well. He was a passionate bear hunter for more than 50 years and died on October 8th of 2006 at the age of 88. Well, folks, that's going to conclude the Gone to the Dogs podcast for this week, the Monday after Christmas, the Monday before New Year's. And I hope that the year 2025 will bring much happiness to you. I hope you got a good young hound or a pack of them ready to go as weather and time permits. We've got to protect this sport. We've got to keep it alive for the next and the following generations. Do what you can when you see an opportunity to contribute to a situation like what's happening right now in Arizona, what recently happened in Colorado. Remember well our fight back in Michigan. And, you know, it's just so important that we preserve this great sport of hound hunting for those in coming generations. All right. Well, we'll have a guest for you next week. Everybody, I kind of gave everybody a break this time because of the hunting or the Christmas season, the Christmas holiday and all. But it's been good visiting with you again, folks. I want to remind you that the sponsors of this program make it possible. They are W Hunting Supply and Alpha Dog Nutrition. And, of course, my friend at Zap Predator Calls, Mark Zap. I want to thank all of them. And if you need anything in the form of supplies for yourself, your dogs, whatever, contact those guys. I do still have copies of Gone to the Dogs, A Coon Hunter's Journey. They are available. You can contact me at Stephen F. Fielder on social media. I'll show you how to get them a copy in your hands, and I'll sign it for you if you'd like. Also, you can find them at stevefielderbooks.com. That's going to shine the tree for this week, folks, here at the Gone to the Dogs podcast. We wish you a very happy new year. May we all get together and go to the dogs.
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm-fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.
You saw the game-winning play once, but have to replay it 3 times on the way back to the hotel. Because some moments don't end at the buzzer. Life's a trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Book direct and save at bestwestern.com.
This episode is brought to you by Peloton. Break through the busiest time of year with the brand new Peloton Cross Training Tread Plus. Powered by Peloton IQ. With real-time guidance and endless ways to move, you can personalize your workouts and train with confidence, helping you reach your goals in less time. Let yourself run, lift, sculpt, push, and go. Explore the new Peloton Cross Training Tread Plus at onepeloton.com.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.